Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of I Could Talk Kayfabe. I'm Joe.
I'm Sean.
And we got an episode. We got an issue of Inside Wrestling. What year is this from? 1996, November of 96. So we're going mid-90s here for everybody.
Which is rare, I think, has been rare for us because we haven't really covered a lot of these after books from this era, from the mid-90s. I mean, we've done like early 90s, but mid-90s is a bit different.
Yeah, we tend to just gravitate towards like the lower quality wrestling magazines when we do mid-90s. But we're doing Inside Wrestling.
I feel like these are harder to find.
Yeah, I feel like not only that are they harder to find, but they're more expensive. And it's probably because people on eBay are like, oh, it's got Sting. It's got the NWO. It's worth money. No, it's not. It's not worth anything. So they're harder to come by.
I'm fascinated that people actually sell these for like $10.
Yeah, they try to at least. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I go to, you know, you would places and they're just selling these for just a lot of cash,
yeah.
You know, or just more cash than I think I'd be willing to pay, because I figured I would just be able to just walk into like a comic book store and you can buy them for like $1 or $2.
Yeah, the most I'll spend on a wrestling magazine is $3. Like I don't think I'll ever spend more than $3 on a magazine.
Has that been the case so far?
Yeah, that's okay, kind good. Of my price point. Like if I buy a whole lot and I'm spending like $20 or $30, I better be getting them at least $3 a piece. Like that's the way I justify
that's
it.
Fair.
So,
that's fair.
I will never spend more than $3 on a magazine.
Did you want to talk about our buddy Stately Wayne Manor real quick?
Yeah, we can mention Stately Wayne Manor. He posted, and we retweeted it on Twitter, a very fascinating read about how these magazines were written by Marx for Marx and also inspired guys to become wrestlers.
Yeah.
And it's such a great read. You need to check it out. Find Stately Wayne Manor on Twitter and find his post. I should have looked up his website prior to recording it.
Well, here's the thing. If you go to our Facebook page on I Could Talk Kayfabe and you look it up there, it's on.
Yeah, we posted it there as well.
We posted it there as well. It's also on Twitter and stuff. And I just want to say, like, a fascinating part about the article is the way that he discusses the significance that these magazines would have towards the usual, towards the actual wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like it was a much bigger deal than I think people in the wrestling business would want you to believe. I mean, is that the impression that I got?
Yeah, that's the impression I got too, yeah.
Because you have guys like, you know, over the years, like for instance, like I'll take Steve Austin for example. Like, I believe this, and he'll probably agree with this too, that his star, like his stardom, like his presence in pro wrestling was incredibly heightened by Pro Wrestling Illustrated and all those magazines covering him very early in his career. And it really allowed him to move to WCW. I feel like that really helped his stock.
Mm-hmm. I remember I had heard of Chris Jericho and Lance Storm long before they ever appeared in any net, even ECW, long before they appeared that, just by reading the After Mags.
Yeah, well, that's why I remember reading about. I remember, for whatever reason, maybe, I can't remember if it was if I found it in the garbage, or maybe, I don't know why it was there, but it was the Pro Wrestling Illustrated 1994 Year in Review, and my library at high school had it. I can't remember why they had it, but they just had it, and that kind of got me back into reading about wrestling and catching up, you know, because, you know, I wasn't really active in, you know, there's periods in the mid-90s that I wasn't as active in pro wrestling that, you know, I had to catch up with. So this magazine helped me do that, and now it's something with Jericho and Storm, that's where they were. They were in Smoky Mountain, and you got to hear about them there. And so when he came to ECW, you know, years later, a year or two later, when I was watching ECW, when I got into ECW, I was already familiar with him. And I was kind of like, oh, okay, I know who that guy is. Like, he's not just some random dude you know, that they're bringing in. Because so a lot of people, I mean, that's where I think a lot of people really obviously started to notice Jericho.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I remember being in eighth grade. It was like 93 reading about Chris Jericho.
Wow.
And
okay.
And I was just like, I remember like seeing a photo of him, and I was just like, I was so mesmerized. I was like, this guy looks awesome. And he had like the long hair at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I was like, wow. And I remember actually writing a letter to Vince McMahon and sending it to WWF saying, sign Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Vince ever got that letter, but 6 years later, he finally got around to signing.
That's probably what happened. He probably got the letter. And he was
he was probably like, you know,
hey, what's this?
He was probably dealing with the steroid indictment by the time I sent the letter.
Yeah,
and, he just didn't get around to it till 6 years later.
He wasn't looking
later.
At the bags of fan mail that you were sending.
Yeah.
But
I remember saying I want you to bring Dino Bravo back too, even though Dino Bravo was long deceased by then.
Well, okay.
But I must have missed that issue.
Look at
this
smart ass.
Yeah. So,
Dino's up. I'll dig him up. Fans need it.
But yeah, it's an interesting read. And then another thing he was saying was like how the wrestlers. You're damn right that they look for themselves, mm-hmm. and if they're in there, they're gonna keep the magazine, and they're always like. As soon as the PWI 500 comes out, if they're not on the list, they're going to be the first ones to complain. Oh, it's political. Oh, it's this and that because they didn't make the list.
That's funny because I remember one of the famous backstage stories, at least not famous, I mean, at least I remember it, is about Ahmed Johnson and him being pissed off that he wasn't higher in the main event scene because he was ranked higher than other dudes in the PWA 500, and he referenced it backstage, you know, into the, you know, obviously everybody was like, the fuck, you know, like whatever, you know, but, yeah, I mean, I think the PWA 500, maybe we might have to actually cover like an old one. I actually would love to cover the first one of those.
We should cover the first one and the most recent, cause Stately Wayne Manor also stated that like, they made, Roman Reigns number one.
Because that's what gets people talking.
Yeah, and people are complaining about it, but you know what? You're talking about it, so they did their job. And
Dan Murphy knows how to do it.
Yeah. I've seen firsthand.
Yeah, I like this.
I've seen wrestlers pestering Dan Murphy to put them on the list. I'm not going to name which wrestlers, but by now everyone knows we're from Buffalo, New York.
Was it Crazy Cruz?
No, it was not. I will say it was not. I can confirm it was not Crazy Cruz. But, I mean, you guys know what wrestling outfit I was a part of by now. If you don't, it was Buffalo Championship Wrestling. And you know what work – you could look up what workers
Joe was
work
a part
there.
Of the Catch Wrestling Association
and,
in Germany.
And I'm not saying that these guys were with Buffalo Championship Wrestling or with the, or if they were with ESW or OSPW, which were the three
– You're kind of narrowing it down.
But But they were clamoring. They were pestering Dan Murphy. Put me in the 500. Put me in the 500.
Did Chris Hill ask to be in the PWA 500 because of his...
No, Chris Hill did not.
Hey, Dan Murphy, I want to be in the 500. That's my Chris Hill impersonation.
If he did, he didn't do it in front of me, but I don't think he would have dared to ask.
I'm kind of a worker.
He screwed up calling... He called Diamond Dallas Page Dallas Diamond Page on the first ballpark brawl when he introduced him.
What a fan. he got really mad at us one time. Did you ever hear about this? Well,
no.
I'm not really mad, but it was something where we were taping a Monday Night Mayhem episode, and it was me and Bosch and probably Blade. And we were talking to Matt Bentley, or Michael Shane, you know who he is, right?
It sounds familiar.
He's Shawn Michaels' nephew.
Okay.
But he was – and he wrestled in EC – basically, he has two claims to fame. First of which is that he wrestled at the very last ever ECW event in Poplar Bluffs, Missouri.
Okay.
Because he was one of those guys that they would just randomly bring in. And he just happened to be there, one of those guys. And then he went on to be in TNA, and he was a part of a bunch of different angles. He was in Raven's Serotonin group with Johnny Devine and Frank Azarian, but he was known as at some point he was known as Matt Bentley, and he had like a little bit of a cult following. I don't even know what he's up to now, but he did wrestle at like a ECW, not ECW, ESW show at some point, or it was something that me and Mosh were at. And but anyways, we were talking to him, and we were having this, you know, the typical Monday Night Mayhem conversation. You know, Big Mosh asks a question for 30 minutes. The guy goes, you know, and then Big Mosh goes,
It sounds like every episode of Monday Night Mayhem.
And so, yeah. But at one point, I asked like a follow-up question that put him off on like a tangent, you know, that about something that just kind of set him off. And Big Mosh got all freaked out because we were supposed to call Chris Hill to ask, talk about, promote the brawl.
Yeah,
the ballpark brawl, and we were late, and Chris Hill was like, oh, well, I'm not going to talk to you now. Yeah, we talked to Matt Bentley some more, you know, whatever. And, you know, Big Mosh was like, Sean, why'd you ask that question? Now I'll never get to talk to Chris Hill, and I'll never get to judge a match alongside Slick.
Oh, man.
But what match was that? Was that Cesaro?
I was long gone by then, so, yeah.
Oh, fuck, I got that. I feel like it was a Claudio Castiglione and Corey Graves or Sterling James Keenan.
Yeah, I was long gone by then. Yeah, I was already living out here by the time that match took place.
Oh, yeah, you missed it.
Yeah.
You missed all the good times. I can't remember.
Chris Hill is like, he's not even in Buffalo anymore. He's in Sugarland, Texas.
Yeah,
he was working for the Skeeters for a while, but I don't even think he's with them anymore. I think he's just down in Texas enjoying life.
And... For the listeners, if we probably referenced Chris Hill before, but Chris Hill used to work for the Bisons. I don't know what his official title was, but he was just like this guy that was like, let's do wrestling after the games.
Yeah.
And he did a few of them. That were, you know, at first were, I think, mostly they were well-received.
Yeah, they were great. The first ballpark brawl was pretty awesome just because there was wrestling at the ballpark, and that was such a cool idea. And it had Jeff Jarrett, and it had
Raven
in the main event.
Was Disco Inferno was there,
Disco Inferno came out, and then they
Nikolai Volkoff was there.
Sabu.
Was that? Yes, yeah, Sabu was there.
And,
Snuka was there, too?
Snuka was there. Yeah, Snuka wrestled Volkoff, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was Snuka wrestled Volkoff. Because
he was supposed to wrestle Bundy, but then Bundy got the gout, so Volkoff took his place. That was the one where DDP came out, and he called him Dallas Diamond Page. And he was just there. He wasn't wrestling, because by then his back was screwed up, and he couldn't work anymore.
He didn't figure out DDP yoga yet.
Yeah, actually, I think he was probably doing DDP yoga, but it wasn't like as widely known as it is now.
It was YRG.
Yeah. Yeah, it was yoga for regular guys.
I like that's what he used to call it because it was like, but I think he realized that the initials just look silly. Because YRG is just, it's weird.
Well,
Yerg.
DDP yoga. Well, DDP is a great brand because he's, you know, everyone knows DDP.
Well, no, I mean, that makes sense.
And, it's not just for men. Women do it, too. And
yeah, I think that's what he realized.
Yeah, so, he changed the market. And good thing he did because it's taken off. We both do it. We both love it.
I love it.
We've lost weight doing it. I've lost a ton of weight doing it. So
I haven't lost as much weight, but I do like – it's something where if I can get my ass out of bed and do it in the morning, I've realized it not – because sometimes I'll do it at night. But then I'll be like, ah, fuck, you know, maybe I don't want to do it at night. So maybe if I could just figure out how to get my ass out of bed, because I've listened to Chael Sonnen's show, and he's doing DDP yoga to help, you know, kind of keep himself limber and stuff and just keep him in order. And he talks about it. He's like, I'm just going to get out of bed when the alarm rings, which, I mean, that's a problem. Like, this morning I just fucking laid in bed for like an hour.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, I know, because I don't have, it's one of the things where it's like I don't have anything pressing. You know, I have stuff to do, but I don't have stuff to do right away. I mean, I know I'm coming to here, and I know I got other work to do, but it's whatever. But anyways, so getting back to Chris Hill, though. Chris Hill, like, he did these promotions, and he did – I remember the second one had Dusty Rhodes on it, and it was supposed to have Terry Funk. I think Terry Funk – Terry –
See, Dusty was gone by the time, or I was gone by the time Dusty was involved in these things. So there was a
that was number two. I'm sorry, number two.
Number two was supposed to be the triple threat main event, where it was supposed to be a three way dance between Shane Douglas, Chris Candido, and Bam Bam Bigelow.
That's right.
Bam Bam retired like months before the event, so then they replaced him with Al Snow, and then Shane Douglas no showed the event. So then the main event ended up being Chris Candido and Al Snow. And for not being the advertised main event, it was a great main event. They battled all over the place, And they tore the house down. They went out for like an hour too.
Well, I remember a number of things about that. There was it was this match they did with Teddy Hart and this indie guy Derek Wilde.
Yeah.
He did a
moonsault off the backstop.
He did a moonsault off the backstop that didn't hit.
No, yeah.
It was really a silly thing to do. And then I also remember, because it was a surprise, was Sean O'Hare.
Yeah.
Was there.
Yeah.
And he did a match with Abyss, I think.
And then Kamala was there.
No, that was the one after.
Oh, it was after?
Yeah, because that was the one with Kamala and Lanny Poffo. You weren't there for Lanny Poffo.
No. Oh, I wasn't there for Kamala either. That's right. What am I thinking?
Because Lanny Poffo was there. I forgot what Kamala
I just remember did. Dan Murphy played Kim Chi.
Right.
Hearing about it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I wish I would have played Kim Chi, but I moved to California.
Yeah. No, yeah. I remember Lanny Poffo was there, and he was just kind of like wandering around in flip-flops with his computer, because he was probably, this is 2004, so, he had this giant laptop that he had to do work on.
He's probably writing poems about Buffalo.
Yeah, or probably just being like, I gotta. Maybe playing solitaire. I don't know.
Yeah. Minesweeper.
Minesweeper. Oh, I play Minesweeper. I just realized he wore a wig.
Oh, really?
There's a video GIF that I found. I have to go back and find it.
Oh, the blonde wig?
No.
Oh, he an actual wig?
Like
because I remember he lost his hair. He lost a hair versus hair match and wore a blonde wig for a while after that.
What, when he was at the Beverly Brothers?
Yeah.
There was a one where I think he was with either, it was sometime when he was with Mr. Perfect, when he was obviously when he was a genius, and his regular long hair, whatever they had, like, that was apparently was a wig at some point. It came off. I have to find the gif, but it took. I think it's actually, because it's on the new collection.
Oh,
that'll be the Coliseum videos. So we'll have to. I'll have to go back and check that out.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that too, because I watched a lot of them as a kid. Because my one neighbor, for some reason, was able to order the Coliseum. That's the thing. Like, the Coliseum videos are kind of. Who actually owned those?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I never knew anybody that owned them. I knew people that you could rent them.
Yeah, and my neighbor two houses down, he had a couple, and I used to watch them all the time. I want to see if they're on the network. They were from like the early 80s. They were
those haven't been uploaded yet. Oh, okay. I think there's a bunch that are like the later.
Like they had the one I remember, Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas were on. I was like, oh man, there was black guys and they were tag champs. That's what I used to think as a kid. I was like, wow.
That was something a lot of people didn't know. I mean, there was, I mean for both of us, like our fandoms really didn't start until
those guys 86,
87. So that was a long, different time.
WrestleMania 2, like that whole era, that's kind of when I was old enough to know what was going on and start watching.
Yeah. But there was one, the one that they have on there is Kamala Bowling.
Oh, okay. So that's I remember seeing that like in WWF Magazine. So
Right. Yeah, I didn't know anybody that actually owned them. I know I used to rent them though from time to time, and you can always pick them up. And I remember I'm trying to remember how this all worked out, and I'm disappointed that I didn't pick it up. I was in Chinatown in New York City in 2000, and there was a random ass video store in Chinatown, and they had old Coliseum videos. And I specifically remember the Ken Patera story in Clamshell, because that was one of the videos they released, was just the Ken Patera story, which hopefully they'll upload to the thing. I don't think they will, but maybe they will. I don't know. We can only be so lucky.
Yeah. So with that said, we should take our break.
Yes.
And we'll come back and we will talk about Inside Wrestling from November of 96. The Steiners are on the cover, so that's exciting.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence, and it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
Okay, we're back. And Inside Wrestling, November 96, the Steiners. It doesn't even say the brothers. They're not brothers. They're just the Steiners. And they're feasting on a buffet of violence. And that makes me laugh because it makes me think of the Road Warriors and their smorgasbord of violence. So there's just a lot of eating violence going on.
You know, they wanted to use smorgasbord. They wanted to use smorgasbord and they didn't.
Yeah.
They were just like, eh, you know, we'll just say, we'll just use buffet. It's easy. It looks better.
Yeah.
I do. Although I do like the word smorgasbord.
Is Shoney's a buffet?
It's like, for what I understand, it's like a Sizzler.
Oh, okay. So there's
so
a
I think it, I, yeah. So I think it, I, you know, essentially, it's a Sizzler.
So if this magazine were to come out today, it would say feasting on a buffet of Shoney's.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There's a. I'm pretty certain that is a Sizzler-esque restaurant where, but they serve breakfast. If like you, so, it's like a. I think they have like different
yeah
options throughout the day as opposed to.
So
Sizzler.
It's more like a Golden Corral.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
So if you've ever been to a Shoney's and we're incorrect on this, please correct us on Twitter. Hit us up at Angry Hero Sean and Sweatpants Joe and let us know what Shoney's is about because we've never been.
I'll go to a Shoney's. I'll go to Scott's.
We went to the Golden Corral a couple of weeks ago. We corralled it up.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah,
it wasn't too bad. There was some parts of it that I'm like, like their salad bar was pretty sad.
Yeah, it was a weak showing of just iceberg lettuce.
Yeah, it was a pretty usually because Sizzler is pretty good with that.
Yeah,
I can get a decent salad at a Sizzler, but at the Golden Corral, considering everything that's there, I'm kind of
lacking. There was like a Sizzler you can get all sorts of vegetables, broccoli and cucumbers and mushrooms.
Yeah, there was
and
a
carrots
lot of greens
and chichi beans and stuff. Yeah, this.
I like that you call them chichi beans.
Yeah, that for whatever reason they
that's is that a Northeast thing? Is that a Buffalo thing?
Chichi beans came to my head. I didn't say garbanzo beans. I said chichi beans.
I have never. I feel like I've always called them chichi beans. My father used to call them was chichi beans, and I'm like, why did we call them chichi beans? I just okay, they're just called chichi beans, and I'm like, there's got to be a reason behind it. I don't know is it a racist reason.
I have no idea. I hope not.
I certainly hope not, but I call it, that's what I've been calling them.
Yeah, there's plenty of other things I avoid saying because they're racist, so.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, this particular, you know, the garbanzo beans have always been known to me as Gigi beans.
Yeah.
Every time my dad, here's the thing, every time my dad would go, if we go to Pizza Hut, my dad would get a salad. The kids didn't get the salad. I didn't get a salad.
Yeah.
But, you know, my dad would be like, I'm going to get a salad and a beer. And he'd get the chichi beans, and he'd be like, Dad, what are those? Those are chichi beans.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, I've never been to a Chi-Chi's.
Well, I don't even know if that's still a thing.
I think, isn't one of those restaurants, like a Chi-Chi's is a Mexican restaurant that was in, I think it was definitely in Western New York.
There was one in Amherst I went to a couple times before it closed. Yeah.
Never, well, that's the thing, because I didn't live near there, so we had no reason to go that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, my family and I never experience. No, there was a Chi-Chi's, I think, on Transit.
Yeah.
And maybe in Depew or somewhere in that area, or Clarence. And I remember passing by it, but it was never a thing where we were like, oh, we're going to go to a Chi-Chi's. My family never let us do Mexican food.
Yeah.
That was actually the thing when I was younger. I don't think tacos were a thing until like the mid-90s for us.
I remember going to Chi-Chi's as a kid in high school. For whatever reason, one of the extracurricular activity groups I was in, we went to Chi-Chi's, and
did you get a grade for eating chichi beans?
No,
at Chi-Chi's?
No, I didn't.
Or fried ice cream, whatever the fuck it is.
Everyone else was like, and I was with them. I was like, well, I don't even know what to order because we were like, I've never had Mexican food.
Exactly,
in my life.
You wouldn't know. Like, Mighty Taco has been around for years, but I mean, it's not a thing where your parents are like, you know, at least my parents were never like, hey kids, let's go to Mighty Taco.
Yeah,
it's like, no, we're going to McDonald's or Burger King or Not even Wendy's. We're just McDonald's, Burger King.
Yeah.
That's it.
And then, so I don't even remember what I ordered. But now, like, looking back on it, if I was to go to Chi Chi's now, I'd be in heaven. I love Mexican food. So I'd pig out.
I wonder if we were to go to a Chi Chi's, our current selves were to travel back in time to go to a Chi Chi's, would we think it's overrated? I think we would. I feel like...
I think
I have a feeling that...
But our current selves going back to Chi Chi's in Buffalo, we'd be like, this is probably good for Buffalo because there's not a lot of good Mexican places there. But out here in L.A., yeah, forget it.
Well, it's funny. Actually, it reminds me of the time I went to with Jen. You know, she's from Denver. So there was Casa Bonita.
Yeah, okay. Denver, yeah.
Which we went to, and you're there... I realized very quickly that you're there for the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because the food is not good.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is. And that's what I imagine Chi Chi's being like. Like, okay. It's just being like a very, just kind of a sad, like it was a sad Mexican food representation, which I'm certain there are great Mexican places in Denver, but Casa Bonita is not one of them. Also, it's coupled by the fact that you're sitting next to a pool that people dive into.
Oh, geez.
Because that's the whole gimmick, because they have this big waterfall and people dive into it.
I knew there was a waterfall. I didn't realize people jump into it.
Oh, yeah. They got, like, kids. They got, like, fucking kids that are like that work there. They're just like, all right, I'm in high school. I'm going to dive into this pool.
I don't like that.
Yeah. And it smells of chlorine.
Oh, I don't
like
that
at all.
So if
you're eating Mexican food with the chlorine smell, and then there's, like, they have the sopapillas or whatever they're called, or, like, these pastries that Jen loved it, because she's like, oh, you put, like, honey in it. And I'm like, I ain't fucking putting honey in it. I'm not a honey. I put honey in some stuff, but I try to stay away from it because it gets on me. Fuck that. So, I don't know. Scott Snyder and your Shoney's has gotten us off track again.
Yeah, sure has.
So, anyways, Inside Wrestling, the November 1996, Feasting, the Steiners feasting on violence. Just a picture of them standing next to each other. In the middle, there's a picture of them giving Stevie or Booker T the top rope bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
They look very hungry. Then also here, and there's a lot of colors here. A lot of it's like a weird. It's like a red, white and purple.
Yeah, I think they were trying to match Rick Steiner's singlet because he's got a bunch of different colors on his singlet there.
Well, he's got like the blue. There's a little bit of light blue that they can
glom
onto in the purple, I think, but it's not quite there.
Yeah.
So
and they definitely photoshopped the fonts because you can see all the scribble outline the outline text. Way too overdone in Photoshop.
Well,
and then the feasting of the buffet of violence is in a different font.
I have a question. Am I crazy or so this has got a red outline.
Yeah.
Do you see yellow here?
I do.
Okay. I just looked at it.
It's red, yellow, and then like orange, it looks like almost. Like three different color outlines, but they're very subtly different.
There's some stuff going on in this.
A lot of different colors going on in this cover.
So on the side it says we got... the match that was too violent for any arena. Oh, man. King of the Ring, do it right or ditch it. They ditched it. And then at the very top, we have Shawn Michaels' unsolvable problem. And it's back when he was wrestling the British Bulldog. And you got a picture of them grappling. So
it's funny that there's a photo of the British Bulldog, and he's got Shawn Michaels in a hammerlock.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, if you read the article... The whole thing, they're talking about how the whole match was hammerlocks and headlocks for 20 minutes, and then it turned into a suplex contest.
And I kind of remember that, yeah.
And I was like, that sounds, the way they're describing it sounds boring, but it actually was a pretty good match from what I remember.
That was...
Was that the In Your House Beware of Dog?
Yeah. No, well, In Your House Beware of Dog, that ended in a double pin. But I think they're talking about I think they're talking about the King of the Ring, because the King of the Ring just happened.
Yeah.
So they're talking about the match that was there, and that just ended in a clean pin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So anyway, so this this is actually a pretty good book. You know, there's you get your letters. I didn't read any letters. Is anybody here that I know that sent a letter? Selena Kyle. Ooh, Catwoman. There you go. How about that? She wrote a letter.
Catwoman wrote a letter. Yeah.
I do like the names making news though, because there are some interesting things in here that I just enjoyed coming across here. So literally, the thing about this issue is that this is their first inside wrestling. I mean, there's been other Aftermags, I think, that's already published before this, but this is the first Aftermag inside wrestling to be after Hulk Hogan's heel turn.
Yeah.
So he just turned at Bash at the Beach, and so everybody's still digesting that pretty much. And there's, you know, and then they talk about that up front and how Bill Apter got snubbed by Hulk. When all the shouting started, I was able to get a few words from Hogan, who was being very selective in granting interviews. He seemed very distant and didn't address me with his usual brother Bill. So that's kind of a snub.
I like the photo of Hulk Hogan. Now, this is from when Hulk Hogan like had that feud going on with the Giant, and he shaved his mustache.
Oh, yeah, that's from the 95.
He had a very similar look to the NWO Hulk. Mm-hmm. So he's got no mustache. He's got like the black with the airbrushed Hogan bandana and then an airbrushed shirt. But on the shirt, it's a black shirt, but then it's got a photo of him like in the red and yellow doing like his Hulk pose. So it's a pretty funny photo.
The way that it says Hulk Hogan, it's an airbrushed Hogan posing in the black, red and yellow, but he's in front of the word Hulk.
Yeah.
The Hulk is huge, and then Hogan's underneath it.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Again, I've said this many times on the show, and I've actually mentioned this a few times lately because it's come up, just somehow it's come up, but Hulk Hogan is like the picture. I mean, just for the pictures alone and all these magazines, he's like a beautiful gazelle.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot... I'm just realizing all these photos and like all these different outfits and different things about it. And it's just, it's wild. So yeah, we get some news here though about, let's see, Carl DeLuke, son of veteran Paul DeLuke, is wrestling in Canadian Independence, and the WWF Talent Scouts have been watching him closely.
Oh, I'm sure they have.
Yeah. That's why he never showed up. Yeah. I also, this is an interesting bit here. They even say so themselves. Here's an unusual item. Northern Championship Wrestling held a retirement match between Warlock and Damien. I just want to imagine it being like Adam Warlock and Jake the Snake's Snake. Like, just like Adam Warlock being like, you know, doing, just being all, being a dick. And then he's just yelling at his bag. So they had a retirement match in July, but after Damien lost, Warlock suffered a heart attack in the dressing room. Now he may be forced to retire as well.
Oh, man.
So
then he's just going to team up with Thanos and take over the world.
There's a lot of random ass things here they talk about that it's like it makes sense, but at the same time, it's just like, it's not as interesting because none of the territories are still around. So they're kind of like, oh, well, I guess we should talk about this random indie show where some guy had a heart attack, which I guess you should.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just, it doesn't feel as robust as the back in the days where when you had different things you could talk about. So different territories, and you can be like, whoa, what's going on in WWC? Which they probably would cover that too, but. On the Road with Dave Lenker, which is replacing On the Road with Andy Rodriguez, I believe. And this is a very nice kayfabe article about him being backstage at a Baltimore or a Maryland, Landover, Maryland Nitro, and how he's out backstage just trying to get interviews. And he is talking about how he's been observing Colonel Robert Parker, and at this time he hadn't quite yet. I thought it was pretty obvious for a while, maybe, but I guess maybe it just, I thought it was sooner than this, but he, this is when he apparently is helping out Harlem Heat against the Steiners and all their matches. And there's a picture, actually a great picture later, cause you have to fucking bounce all ahead here, but
yeah.
It's a great picture later of him, the writer here, Mr. Lenker.
Oh, that is a sweet photo, yeah.
And having a cigar.
Yeah.
You can't get Mark photos like that anymore.
No.
You know what I mean?
I wonder if they're talking about Colonel Robert Parker's big dick. I wonder if that ever.
is that what we're implying here? Yeah. He's like, hey, look at this cigar. It's like my cock.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah? Let me put one of those in my mouth. I'll show you my cock.
Just a bunch of guys backstage showing each other dicks. Fucking WCW, let me tell you. But yeah, you know, so that's the gist of that column. This is something that you brought up here.
Yeah, so Pedro Morales seconded Conan for some WCW matches this summer, and he was his old fiery self. I know he's too old to wrestle now, but I'd love to see him put on the tights. I wouldn't mind seeing him squash Conan either. I don't think that was going to happen. I also don't remember Pedro Morales like at all being in WCW, but you claim that he was a
he was a Spanish language announcer for a while there, actually. Like I would say going back to like 93.
Okay, yeah, so that makes sense that he would be there then. Well, I just don't remember him being on TV with Conan.
Well, I remember there being something where they, because he's in the WWF Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And he got inducted, and he couldn't attend because he was working for WCW.
Oh, okay.
Doing the Spanish language stuff. So, yeah. But that was his deal. And
why would they induct him then if he couldn't attend? I know it wasn't a big deal back then. They didn't have a big special like they do now. But
yeah, I don't know. They decided they wanted to get him in. And, you know, he's still alive, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He totally is.
He was never a good wrestler. I mean, in my opinion, look, I know he was a very popular wrestler for back in his time. But
he was
the
champ.
He was the champ. And he was very popular in the Northeast. But yeah, because of the Hispanic population, and that's something that you always, when you read about Pedro Morales, it's like everybody's like, man, Pedro Morales, he was the fucking shit. But once you got past, like once Vince took over,
yeah,
you know, he kind of, I mean, obviously he was on his way out, and you know, the only thing I remember from him is being, just not being very. You know, he was losing a lot.
He was more or less a jobber, and I had his trading cards. That's about it. That's all I remember of Pedro Morales.
Never really. I mean, it was one of those things, too, where you would read about him in magazines like this, and just them, because they would also have to do is, but Pedro Morales was great. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I guess so.
Yeah.
You know, but he was definitely on his way out, and, you know, here he is. I do like that this guy is like Eddie Elner for some reason. Well, it's Eddie Elner, so yeah. I guess that makes sense that he would want to see Pedro Morales get back in the ring to get his ass kicked by Conan, which speaking of which, because I've started playing WWE 2K18 again, and I downloaded a Conan. I'll have to get him in this his original WCW outfit.
And then you should have him with Pedro Morales in his corner.
I should put a Pedro Morales. Well, I think you have sort of Pedro Morales as one finisher in there because he did a Boston Crab and a crossbody, but he also had that backbreaker that they have in the game where, and for some reason you can't, I don't know if you can use it as a finish. I don't understand why they do that. It makes me, drives me crazy. But it's that one where you pick the guy up as a back suplex and then you just drop to a knee real quick and just drop him on your knee.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like it's basically like a weaker back special, back move, but so that was one of his joints. But yeah, so they talk about him, and then here's old picture of Hogan, again, another old picture of Hogan. Him wrestling Andre the Giant. For some reason, I thought this was one man gang, but I don't think it is. I think that's the ref that in the match.
Probably is the ref.
Yeah. So, yeah, and this is Liz Hunter. And this is actually great because this is the whole gist of it is like she's like, okay, well, I got to do a thing on Hogan, but I'm not gonna be able to get to Hogan because I'm usually like not a rule breaker person to talk to rule breakers, and. Or just I don't think I'm gonna be able to get in. So I had she interviews Eddie Elner and talks about like why did Hogan turn? You know, just kind of getting into all the nuts and bolts about that. And
lazy journalism is what that is. It go is lazy go interview the Hulk. Don't
it's
interview
lazy
Eddie
journalism
Elner.
By two people that don't exist.
Yeah.
So real quick, I want to point. Oh, I'm sorry.
The rock. No, I wanted to say that too. The Rock and Roll Hotline. There was an ad for it. Call now 1-900-454-7700 extension 99, and you could talk to what is this?
So you can't talk to anybody.
No, it's just tour schedules, mailing addresses, concert locator. So it's basically anything you want to know where Bon Jovi is. You call and then you dial in whatever Bon Jovi's number.
Here's what you do: you pay $2.99, you pay $3 to call this number, and then you. If you really want to know, you put in whatever this code is or whatever. And it's crazy because they have this gigantic list of all these bands.
I saw Porno for Pyros was on
this. Well, literally every alternative band from the 90s that you've ever heard of is on this, as well as all the hair bands. So Bullet Boys is on here.
Elvis Costello's on there.
Elvis, yeah, you got an alternative that. I mean, there's a few on here that I'm just... It just blows my mind because I'm like, I don't even know if some of these bands were still around. But, it's pretty, Slayer. Well, Slayer's not hair metal. But, yeah, it's a fascinating little ad here. Capsule Profile. Rey Mysterio.
Rey Mysterio Jr., and he has hair.
This is a weird photo.
Long hair. Like, not long, like, shoulder length, but long hair where it's coming out of his mask.
Well, it looks like, I wonder if it's like they took this picture because he was taking his mask off? But that looks like it, the way the mask is that it's actually, like, a part of his outfit.
Yeah, the hair is coming out of the top of the mask.
I've never seen him wrestle like that. Like, he has that one mask. Like, he went from, you would have, like, the full masks.
Yeah.
But then he also would wrestle in those ones that were, like, you know, kind of, like, Vader-ish on the back, you know, with the straps. And he was always bald. Like, he never had, I mean, eventually, you see him with hair. Yeah. You know, because he always had just short hair. But this looks like he's got, like a nice little do.
Yeah. And it's like a full mask, but the top, the hair is coming out of the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen this look, and it's different. I don't know if I like it or not. It's different. That's for sure.
I would have loved it if he would have showed up at the Rumble like that.
Yeah. I don't dislike it.
No, but, I don't dislike it either, but I mean, I just kind of, it's like one of those things where if you would be in WCW Revenge and you would put a mask on a guy, but it was a guy that had hair. Or maybe even like the any of the games.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
The
that's
like,
exactly.
Hey, look, it's Rey Mysterio, but he's got hair.
Yeah, it's a great way to describe it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
is Mysterio back now, or is that was just a
one
time?
That
thing?
Was just a one off. I think they want to bring him back because his return really, I think, just brought a lot. I think it brought a lot of people. It really piqued a lot of interest, and especially obviously with the Hispanic crowd, like they always want to really get in with them. And Ray looked great.
Yeah, he did. He looked awesome.
He looked he looked super in fit.
Yeah.
Super fit. And I guess he's been fit for a while. Like, I mean, I remember last time he would always, he wrestled in like the full suit, the full, mm-hmm. body, like not the, like the tank top and the pants. Like, I remember last time we saw him was at a WrestleMania Battle Royal.
Mm-hmm.
He was just there. And then you never hear from him for like the rest of the time. And then, he showed up and he looked awesome. And people are going nuts, and so hopefully they'll bring him back. I think they want to, and I think it's just a matter of just keeping it, making him happy, you know, in terms of dates. Like, it might be like a Lesnar thing or just something, you know. But yeah, I mean, they could definitely use him. Where are they now? And we have a bunch of this is interesting because now we're at the phase in '96 where we're not talking about guys like Sweet Hansen, like a lot of those guys, you know, or just. You know, Haystacks Calhoun or mm-hmm. just random ass, like, old dudes. Now we're talking about, like,
guys from the early 90s.
Guys from the early
90s. Or from the mid-90s, like Bunkhouse Buck.
Yeah, Bunkhouse Buck. Because it's almost as if, though, too, like, these guys are gone from WCW or WWF, and they're just like, okay, well, let's just see what they're doing. And, you know, they could get in it right away. And Bunkhouse Buck, you got Donnie Allen, who was a ECW mainstay for a long time. He actually played, maybe it was Feinstein. He, I feel like he had a role in the fake BWO as somebody.
Oh.
I don't know. And then you have a woman named Ann Casey who's just like, oh, that just might be somebody's mom. It probably is somebody's mom. I don't know. Scott Casey's mom?
I don't know. That's the
first it's just some, like, 1950s picture. Just like, here's a woman.
Ann Casey, who retired from the sport many years ago, has decided to attempt a comeback. So that's what she was up to.
Oh, okay.
But my favorite one is Bastion Booger. He was wrestling in Michigan. More important, these road trips give me a chance to try all kinds of great fast food restaurants. Booger's most memorable road trip, my first chicken nugget experience. I ate over 100 in one sitting. I remember the place just outside Detroit, January 18th, 1984. I could still taste them.
R.I.P. Mike Shaw.
That's a good inclination why he's dead.
Yeah, that might have did him in. I do like that. Yeah, that the Fashion Booger has a little highlight here. I like that he's out there being Booger. Did he ever come back? I don't think he did.
No, I don't think so.
I think that was pretty much it for him.
Yeah, he was done.
And again, we've talked about on the show. I have not seen any Mike Shaw merchandise.
No.
I mean, I know there was a Norman shirt.
Give me a Bastion Booger figure.
I want a Bastion Booger
and figure. And a Norman figure. I don't need a Trucker Norm, but give me a Bastion Booger and a Norman the Lunatic.
No. Here's what you do. You do a 4-pack.
Okay.
You do Booger. You do Friar Ferguson.
Oh, yeah. Friar Ferguson, yeah.
You do Norman, and then you do Mock and Sing.
Yeah.
So you get Mike Shaw over the years.
I hear his Mock and Sing work was really good. I never never get a chance to watch Stampede Wrestling.
So you'd have to catch Stampede from like 86 to 88 or something. Yeah. Like it's some random time. But he, that's the thing. Like when I was getting into wrestling and you'd read these magazines, you'd hear all about it. But he was also in Global as Mackin Singh.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't watching Global as much as I should have.
God damn it, you missed all the good Mike Shaw.
Yeah.
So
Friar Ferguson would have been a cool gimmick had they stuck with it, but they turned him into a drunk monk. That's a good time.
So news from the wrestling capitals, which is one of my favorites here, is the scouting report type of thing. Or not scouting report, but the arena reports. Nothing really jumps out except for I do want to point out this WCW card. In Charlotte, North Carolina.
When your big match is Lex Luger against Craig Pitbull Pittman, that's a
TV title match.
Yeah.
Because not many people remember that Luger held the TV title for like 6 months.
He was a dual champ, the TV and tag champ.
He was, yeah. He beat Mark Marrow.
God, that used to piss me off.
What, being a dual champ?
No, like they had all the tag teams and they had Lex Luger and Sting as the tag champ.
Well, I mean, that definitely elevates the belt. You know, I mean, not that it didn't need more elevating, but I mean, if Sting and Luger are the champs, I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So I have to disagree on that, but yeah, Pittman and Luger, apparently, you know, that was a TV title match. And he also had, check out this card. If this card happened today, anywhere, like if this happened in like SoCal or something, this would people would be losing their fucking minds. So Guerrero versus Liger.
Okay.
Eddie Guerrero beat Joseph Liger. Harlem Heat beat Mang and the Barbarian. Medusa beat Bull Nakano. Public Enemy beat Scott and Steve Armstrong. And Chris Benoit beat Kensuke Sasaki. Like, that is a badass card.
That is a good card, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's really a lot of... I mean, there's some stuff on here that doesn't... Maybe the Public Enemy match, but it's still... I mean, I would still be entertained.
Yeah, Jushin Liger, Eddie Guerrero, and then Chris Benoit and Kensuke Sasaki. That would be an awesome show. I would have enjoyed that a lot.
I think it's a good lean card, because compared to the New York card, there's some... It's not as good, I think, because you have Sting... They have one here for Sting versus the Giant in New York City, which I'm assuming is in Uniondale.
Yeah, we're assuming it's the Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah. So. You got Ed Benoit beating Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko beating Steve Regal, which that's pretty good. Duggan beat Wall Street, Conan beat Kevin Sullivan, Steiners beat Harlem Heat by disqualification, Luger beat Arn Anderson, Nasty Boys beat Public Enemy, and Savage beat Flair. So that's a pretty mainstream card. Yeah. In New York, you got
to
do.
Yeah, that was pretty similar to the house show that we saw in at the Memorial Auditorium.
Really?
Pretty similar.
I remember we talked about for the
Legends of the Odd, the first one.
I remember Flair was Flair and Lou, not Flair.
Flair and Savage.
Flair and Savage. Nasties and
the Public Enemy.
Public Enemy.
You had Luger versus the Giant.
Was that?
Yeah.
I don't. Okay.
Or no, not Luger. Sting versus the Giant. Luger versus Duggan.
No, Luger. Was it Duggan?
Yeah.
Are we sure about that?
I remember it was kind of like a battle of two Western New Yorkers.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I definitely remember, was it, it wasn't Bubba. It was Wall Street against Conan. I remember
DDP was on the show, too.
Yeah.
He opened the show. I think he wrestled Alex Wright, if I'm not mistaken.
That's about, I think that's right. Because I remember people being like, wow. I remember my dad commenting, like, because Alex probably did like a dive. Mm-hmm. And my dad being like, that's got to be crazy being in the front row and watching him jump from the ring. So, yeah. And then they had all those other shitball matches. Mm-hmm. You know, like, was it just random, like Tony Parisi and Gino Brito against insert Western New York guy here.
Yeah, Bruiser Bedlam was on the show.
Was he?
Yeah.
Bruiser Bedlam, a convicted criminal.
Yeah, RIP Bruiser Bedlam.
Oh, that's right. He's dead, too.
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh, man. Yeah, so... then we go through. I'm skipping Matt Brock. I don't care about Matt Brock. Shawn Michaels bringing out the best of his opponents, the quality wrestler's worst quality.
Yeah,
I like this title. It's like he's so good that everybody can't be good or can't be bad around him. So he's that's his curse.
Kind of predicting the future here, where Shawn Michaels is like like they're saying he's going to get worn out. He's going to get sick of it, kind of is what the gist of it. And then sure enough, he did. He kind of just like, I lost my smile and he left.
Really? So yeah. So there's basically the idea here is that he...
He's carrying everybody and it's going to eventually, like, he's going to get old. He's going to get tired of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, he's wrestling Bulldog. So, like, I don't know why they're making that case for Bulldog, because Bulldog was one of the few guys that could go with Shawn Michaels.
Well, they reference his matches with Vader and Marty Jannetty, or Owen Hart. I mean, yeah. And then also Goldust, which Goldust, I think, is an interesting case. Shawn Michaels and Goldust, which I'm surprised that's the thing they never really got into.
Yeah.
Like, there's actually a lot of 96 matches for Goldust that were just, they never, I feel like there's a lot of them that they could have put together if, and it would just been interesting. Because he always kind of, I feel like he only had a certain amount, certain guys that he wrestled. Like, he was basically Undertaker, Mero, and
Razor Ramon.
Razor and Savio.
Yeah.
And there's, I'm blanking on a few others, but, like, you know, he never, like, he wrestled, I know he wrestled Bret Hart, like, a few times, but it was never, like, you figured, given the way that they pushed him, you figured he would be more prominent. I don't know. Sabu versus Shane Douglas, battle for ECW franchise. I don't really care much for this. Basically, it's just like...
I kind of want to see this match because, like, at the end of the match, you see Paul Heyman coming out to stop the match because Sabu's neck is all screwed up.
Which is rare for ECW.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. So it's like, this is kind of something I want to go see if I can find on the network and see if it's a thing. It probably isn't on there, but...
Shane Douglas in 96, I started watching ECW just when he came back. He was a great heel.
Yeah, he was good. I liked him. Yeah.
It was before the triple threat, but he was, you know, but he just got together with Francine. And that, I think, was really one of those things that hooked me, because he was just such a good heel. And he felt like he held his, the belt for a long time, like the TV belt. And then he won the heavyweight belt.
Yeah.
And it feels like he was like a really a long-term champion.
Before that incarnation of the triple threat, he was with Dean Malenko and was it Too Cold Scorpio before that? Or I don't remember.
Was it Benoit?
Maybe it was Benoit, yeah.
Yeah, the triple threat in ECW, original triple threat was them. Yeah. Or no, maybe it was Eddie. No, it wasn't Eddie. I don't think it was Eddie. I think it was him and Benoit. I think it was Dean and Benoit. But yeah, that was before, because he left to go to WWF for like a couple of months. And then he got sick of that, and he came back over here, back to ECW. So, yeah, maybe if you find this, you have to let me know, because I want to check this out.
Yeah. I see him injure Sabu to the point where Paul Heyman comes in to stops the match.
Some great photos there, actually.
Yeah, and then you see, like, paramedics working on Sabu.
This is the wild one here where he's actually, it's like mid-break for the table, and, like, Shane's doing the deed here. I'm underselling this article, actually.
Yeah, I forget that Sabu was a face for a long time, because, like, he played the heel so well, after he turned on Taz, like, the double turn with him and Taz.
Yeah.
I completely forget that he was actually a face and actually cheered.
I never really felt, Sabu in general, never really came off as a heel to me.
Yeah.
Because he was always just like, I'm Sabu and I'm going to jump on you. And everybody's going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And you did. I mean, I never really watched a Sabu match and been like, I got a reason to boo him.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I loved Sabu.
Yeah.
He was such a cool... He was different. That's why he stood out. He was different. He didn't say anything. But then, like, when he got in the ring, it was like a highlight show. It was awesome.
You didn't know what to expect. I remember one of the early Sabu matches that I really got into was... Because it was on one of these ECW tapes that I would... record is him and Mikey Whipwreck, and that ended up being real good, because it was one of those matches where they did a spot where the table was set up between the ring and the barricade.
Love that spot and
they did the ring, and somehow he jumped and gave Mikey a DDT through the table there, and it's just like, that's just crazy. It was crazy back in 96. I was like, guys, wrestling is real. Did you see that? That's why it's real. Steiner's feasting on Shoney's. I don't really understand why they're just like, it's a buffet of violence, but it's like they're just like, oh well, they got a lot of competition, and
yeah,
I'm like, I don't really like, okay,
they're just wrestling Harlem Heat. I don't get where the violence is coming from.
Let me read this here. Maybe
why is everything underlined in this photo too? That doesn't I don't know. It's giving me a headache.
Rick and Scott Steiner knew they couldn't just return to WCW and claim the World Tag Team Title. They had to take it like a multi-course feast, nice and slow, one team at a time. Next up, Harlem Heat. Okay.
I want to click on the link.
Yeah, I know.
There's no link.
Take me to the story. actually, here they do have some – they talk about how they kind of went through Hawk and Animal.
Yeah.
The Legion of Doom, or Road Warriors, because it's how it was in WCW, the Road Warriors in WCW. This reminded me of – because they're back. Like, it was reminded me of like when I first again got back into wrestling, like in early 96, and they just returned, and I was watching them and the Steiners, because Steiners show back up, and the Harlem Heat and Sting and Luger, and so I was pretty well invested in that. However, I do want to, I don't know if you've ever seen this, because you can't tell from these photos, but there were some interesting variants on the LOD gear back then. Because they did they used to have a blue one.
Yeah, I remember the blue one. Yeah,
and maybe I'm incorrect, because maybe I'm mixing up with Harlem Heat. But there was a green variant.
I don't remember the green. I remember gold. They had a gold one.
I remember. I feel like Harlem Heat also had a blue variant.
Mm-hmm.
And the purple variant.
I kind of remember the green one now that you mentioned it. Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking about Harlem Heat's green variant, but I definitely remember a blue variant. For Legion of Doom. And also, it was a rare match. It was on Pro, or maybe Prime, that they won the match instead of doing a Doomsday device. It was Animal doing a power slam off the rope, off the turnbuckle, top rope. Which I think they've actually, there's a few instances of that happen in 87 Crockett. It's a rare time when they're just like, we don't want to do the Doomsday, we're just going to do a power slam. So, and sometimes, yeah, sometimes they would just win with individual clotheslines, but yeah, Legion of Doom, 96, there you go. King of the Ring, Do It Right or Ditch It. And I don't understand the contention here, because they're like, well, what used to be a one-night tournament that's tested the stamina of WWF's best is in need of repair. And they interview Bret Hart about it, and they're basically like, well, it should be like the main event, and he should go through like three matches. I think they're complaining that it's not enough matches on the pay-per-view.
Yeah,
for just King of the Ring, because Bret went through, well, it was like basically the quarterfinals, semifinals, and the final.
Yeah,
and here by this point they were just doing
the semis and the final.
Yeah,
and the main event was the title match.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Steve Austin won the King of the Ring, but that wasn't even the last thing on the show. So, yeah.
I do even find it interesting, too, that they're like, well, this match happened with Jake and not much happened. And, you know, and that's true, because it was just, Jake was injured and, mm-hmm. Basically he just kicked his ass, went in there and kicked his ass. But they kind of gloss over the fact that he gave one of the most iconic interviews right after.
Yeah.
You know, but
he mentioned that, he's the king.
He's like, yeah, he won.
Yeah, he won.
And that was also a thing that he won the King of the Ring that year. And I don't remember them ever like playing that up. Like not that Steve Austin would have.
Yeah.
You know, as a character, like he wouldn't be like, I've got a.
Yeah.
I got a crown and shit. Because obviously you did that with Owen took it. Brett kind of did the same thing too, where he was just like, I won.
Yeah, he put the crown on, and then Jerry Lawler attacked him. Yeah. And then the next year, Owen won, and he actually wore the crown and became the King of Hearts. Yeah.
And then Kingle was King Mabel. And then, Austin was just like, whatever, I won. But I feel like it was never like a bigger discussion point from that point on. Like, it was never like, oh, he did all this. I mean, granted, he went on to do some great things that year, but it was never like in the build up, it was like, I'm King of the Ring, like he was just basically just like a badass, like it was just a thing to put him over. So Stone Cold, by God, Stone Cold. The hot seat interview, I don't really have much to say about this, because it's very it's milquetoast Eddie Gilbert, just being like, I'm a good fighter, and
Eddie
I'll take
Guerrero.
I'm sorry,
Eddie Gilbert was
R.I.P. Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big boy and I want to play.
I am a big boy and I want to play, he says to the outsiders. He is on fire. You know, and he's got that sweet mustache. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, Eddie's.
He wants to play.
He wants to play. He wants a battle. I feel like this is an old picture of him. Or maybe it is. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
It's a very early WCW photo. It looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, here he's just going on about him and his matches and. Let's see. Oh, he's talking about the horseman here by Goon, referring to the newest horseman, Steve McMichael. Yes, I considered him to be a friend, not a close friend, but he was also friendly to me at the Nitro shows. I knew he wanted to be a wrestler, and I was willing to help him out only if he would have asked me. You know, he should have took Eddie should have helped him out.
Can you see McMichael doing like the 5-star frog splash?
It would be more like a 1-star.
Yeah,
he'd just be like, "Arr." He could barely do a tombstone, and that was, I don't know why you would give Mongo a tombstone as his finisher. You know, which is for a guy that just started wrestling.
Yeah, that's very unsafe.
It's very unsafe. Like, I mean, give him a power slam, give him a Samoan drop or something if you want to differentiate him. Yeah. You know, give him something that he can use as power, because that's basically what he is. But, you know, you're asking him to pick up guys and give them tombstones.
The perfect thing for him to do would have been the 3-point stance, because he was a football player.
Well, that was a part of his repertoire.
Yeah, that should have been his finisher.
But, yeah.
And he could have battled Hacksaw in the battle of the 3-point stance.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. If I was booking WCW, that's what I would have been.
And there could have been a spot in the match where they crash into each other, yeah, and it just ends up being a double count out, and they do like a series of 20 of them, and it just, they all end like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good TV. Terror at the Truck Stop, the match that was too violent for any arena. And you got IWA, or I guess NWA, but I think it's IWA.
Yeah.
Madman Pondo and Ian Rotten fighting each other on glass and mouse traps. This is garbage.
Yeah, it's stupid.
It's garbage.
It's outdoors, and Ian Rotten's covered in blood afterwards, and I don't like it. I don't like any part of this.
It's just boring. I don't find that much enjoyment in death matches.
No, they're stupid.
Yeah.
Especially, like, for the sake of having a death match. It's one thing if, like, there's a feud building and, like, okay, we're going to have the death match. But just to have them like they do in IWA and CZW, nah.
No.
Stupid. Yep, it's crap.
I mean, it's like I guess in Japan or whatever, they make a big deal, like it's a big tournament.
Yeah.
But there's stuff about it that just makes me uncomfortable. Just knowing that it's a performance and that you're choosing. I mean, I understand, like, if you can handle it. Like, I'm not saying people shouldn't do it, but
I am. Don't do it. It's stupid.
But at the same time, it's like you watch, like, Botchamania, and you're just like, oh, God, this looks awful. Like, I mean, I cringe at people doing dumb things in wrestling, because especially, you know, at a thing like this where, you know, there's probably not that many people. I mean, there maybe is. The crowd looks like pretty, like, there's 20.
Like there might be 100 people.
Yeah, so maybe it's a sellout at the Stop. This is random. I don't know why this is here. It caught me off guard because I thought it was a real story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a real story, but it's not from this time period. They decided just to revisit a story of apparently a match that I didn't realize this was a match. It was Hogan and Slaughter from sometime in the summer of 91, and Macho Man was the ref.
Okay.
And he's wearing the one of his Macho Man outfits with the shirt.
Yeah, but it's all stripes.
And it's all stripes. Yeah. And then it's apparently some sort of investigation, the truth behind the Hogan and Savage connection. Hogan once retained his WWF title. Randy Savage wants to make a full return to the sport. Unbeknownst to many, there has already been a reunion of the former mega powers behind the scenes. If each continues to help each other, the ultimate goal of these superstars will soon come to fruition. And then we were, 91, like 6-5 years later, still going on.
Yeah.
6-7-8 years later. I just finished watching Uncensored 98 with, I think it was a cage match between Hogan and Savage. What a fucking mess.
Yeah. It's too bad.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
I do want this. I do want some sort of action figure or wrestling or download for Savage here in the Danny Davis special. I kind of want that. Jesus Christ, is a fucking long
it's
article.
It's a long article. Yeah, a lot of pictures.
How much you got to say?
Let's get to the ratings.
Ratings.
Yeah. So it's interesting because by then it's 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got WCW, WWF, and that's it. And then you have the Roll Call of Champions, but
not the many, not as many.
There's no territories by then. There's no. There's not even an ECW ratings or USWA ratings. It's like it's it. Boom. That's you get what you get.
Although to that point, they are very well. This is first of all, this is inside wrestling. They don't carry as many ratings. Like their whole gimmick is
yeah.
The Roll Call Champions has always been like their thing. Like it's always been different like that. In the top 15, though, they do have ECW and USWA represented.
Yeah,
and multiple times, especially in the tag ranks. Like I feel, yeah, like well, okay, it's not that high, but you know, well yeah, Eliminators are number 6. Brickhouse Brown and Reggie B. Fine are number 9 USWA tag champs. And then going down to number 14, you got Flex Cavana and Bart Sawyer.
Oh, I didn't even realize they were a team.
Yeah, that was Dwayne's humble beginnings in the USWA. So and yeah, and then we just get a bunch of you know, we get our letters here or get our stuff here. I do want to point out this most hated is it, I remember actually being anticipating this because. I knew that Bash of the Beach had happened, but like all my wrestling magazines hadn't caught up yet. So I was like, well, when is it going to catch up? Because I want to know.
Yeah.
I want to see what they're going to say about this.
This was it.
Because this is all that's all I had.
Yeah, because you have Hulk Hogan number 1, last issue unranked.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Even Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were both all unranked.
Wow.
You figure that they would have had a showing maybe in the last issue because yeah. The cutoff date for this was July 25th.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not even at Hog Wild yet. So yeah, it's pretty interesting just to see that, and I always liked that when you could find somebody that's like hasn't been rated, and that this was just like he obviously was going to shoot to the top, so mm-hmm. There it is. I do like the heels here. I'm just gonna
wow, look at this. So you, Steve McMichael's number 10.
I was just gonna point
last that. Issue number 1 most hated was Steve McMichael.
Man, yeah, man, he got. Shafted.
Yeah, because yeah, he just turned heel and joined the Horsemen, and then the NWO happened.
Yeah, he was only a Horseman for like a month.
Yeah,
and when that happened, and he was probably like, yeah, number 1. Man, that's I like that. I like seeing that. I like seeing how different how much that changed. Yeah, so no, yeah, that's pretty much the ratings. You have anything else you want to say about these ratings?
No, that's really what stuck out. So,
yeah.
Yeah, most popular. Kind of interesting that Brian Christopher would be the number 15 most popular. So I guess they are
representing. He barely ekes in there, though.
Yeah.
He barely makes it in. Jerry Lawler is hated back then.
Savio Vega making the most popular.
Well, Savio Vega had like a really good run in like...
I feel like this is a year too late for Savio Vega. I feel like the previous year was more his year.
No, he debuted, but then like he had this run in like mid 96 where him and Goldust were fight. You know, he had like a brief, like I wouldn't say it was really a run, but it was like one of those held up matches for the Intercontinental title with Goldust. And then he was also in the middle of the feud with Austin.
Oh, that's true. He actually beat Austin the Caribbean strap match.
Yeah. Yeah, he was pretty strongly featured in WWF programming for that while. And I'm surprised he didn't he wasn't represented more in like media, I guess. Granted, the WWF at that time didn't have a lot of toys. They didn't have...
Yeah, the first figure I had of Savio Vega was already like the heel Savio Vega of the Nation of Domination.
Yeah, he was the Jax figure came out. By the time he got a Jax figure, he was a part of the Nation.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and they didn't have any video games then.
Yeah.
You know, like, or they did In Your House. That's right. They did that one In Your House on PlayStation.
Yeah.
The In Your House game.
It was the sequel to the WrestleMania arcade game.
And he did not make it in there, surprisingly.
No.
Warrior made it in there.
Sure did.
Yeah, they made
Ahmed Johnson.
Ahmed Johnson. I know Bulldog and Hart Owen. Was it Shawn Michaels? I think Brett was in there.
Razor Ramon was in there.
Did Razor make it into there?
I don't think I've ever played that one.
That's one. That's a game that like I heard about, but then like since I didn't have PlayStation, it never occurred to me to check it out.
I remember reading reviews of it, and everyone was like just trashing it, and I never bothered with it. So
I feel like we should find that game and play it.
Yeah, let me look on eBay and see how much it's going for.
I'm interested in that. Yeah. So, but that's it for this book, I guess. And then we have like one last picture of Jimmy Valiant wrestling the Kabuki back in November of '83.
It's Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown, excuse me.
He's got the mask on.
He looks jacked here, though. For Jimmy Valiant?
Yeah, for Jimmy Valiant, that era, he looks good.
From '83, I'm like, I'm surprised he has any sort of tone. But he looks good there, man. But, yeah, so that's it for this Inside Wrestling from November 1996.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
lots to talk about here.
A lot of talking going on in this issue.
I like it.
A lot of colors, too.
Yeah, a lot of colors, a lot of interesting design choices. I do actually enjoy the ongoing motif of I feel like it's almost like a November motif. It's like fall because all the stuff is hot orange. And like along with the gray, and so it stands out. I shouldn't like it, but I like it.
Yeah,
it's ugly, but I still like it. So,
it's only like a $9 game. So
yeah, it's probably cheap.
I should buy it.
I feel like you and I should just get together and just play it and just do a review of it. You know, for some random ass wrestling games, like because a lot of those games, there's still a lot of wrestling games that I've never, you know, like WWF and WCW ones that I've never tried.
Yeah.
Or really had anything to do with.
Let me read the roster. It's a very small roster. So we have Bret Hart, Ahmed Johnson, Vader,
yeah, Vader.
Gold Dust, Ultimate Warrior, Owen Hart, Triple H, British Bulldog, The Undertaker, and Shawn Michaels. So Razor Ramon did not make the cut.
Well, here's the thing. WrestleMania, the arcade game, had like 8 guys in it.
Yeah.
That's like, what, 12?
Yeah.
So... You know, and that always pissed me off about WrestleMania, the arcade game, because it was like, okay, you're in the middle. I feel like they could have had at least a few more guys in it. And then I think for the home ports, like, you didn't even get Yokozuna. I think you, for SNES, I think for...
Yeah, I had it. It was funny because, like, it
I had it for Genesis.
It didn't come out for the Genesis or the Super Nintendo right away, but it came out for the PC. So I had it on PC, so I had Yokozuna, and when it came out for Genesis and Super Nintendo, I didn't bother with it.
Yeah, I had it for Sega, and then I had, it was basically, it was 8 guys. So it was like Sean, Brett, Taker, Bam Bam.
Boom. Order has been placed. Ooh. I bought In Your House for the PS1.
What else? Luger, Yoko, Doink.
Doink.
And I'm blanking on somebody else.
Yeah.
I should remember. That was an interesting game. Yeah, we'll have to play that.
Yeah,
that and also those WCW like Nitro and
those Thunder games. Those games I have Nitro.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, I heard they're awful.
They are awful.
I know they're awful, but I always interested by the rosters.
Yeah,
because they would always pack in like a lot of random ass guys, especially in the once you got to the Backstage Assault and Mayhem.
Mayhem had some interesting guys. Yeah,
Mayhem's hard as fuck to play though.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back. I'll have to go back and I have yet to hook up the N64
uh-huh.
to enjoy the revenge.
Yeah.
I'll have to get to that. But because right now I'm enjoying 2K18. I downloaded a Buff Bagwell. I don't know why. I'm just because I'm watching all this WCW 98, so I'm just getting nostalgic.
Oh, man. Well, I've been playing nothing but Ms. Pac-Man. That's all I've been playing, and I've been playing it. I go to arcades and I play it. I'm obsessed with it. So they just opened up a new arcade in Northridge, and they have the difficulty very easy on Ms. Pac-Man. So now it's like I'm trying to get 50,000 on that cabinet. Oh,
you're coming for Billy Mitchell?
Yeah, whereas like on normal settings, I'm lucky if I get 20,000, but now I'm trying to get 50 on that particular one. It's okay. So much fun.
Gotcha.
Oh, I love Ms. Pac-Man. But that being said, we should wrap this up.
Let's
you can
do
find
it.
Me on Instagram and Twitter. Sweatpants Joe. Also, I want to announce I just started a new YouTube channel, Sweatpants Joe Eats, where I'm doing fast food reviews from my car because I realized those are very popular on YouTube and they're very easy to make. So I'm doing that. So look for me on YouTube, Sweatpants Joe Eats as well.
Shout out to that. And also you can find myself on Twitter and Instagram at Angry Hero Sean. And you can check out my other podcast, Worst Collection Ever, on Apple Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, Stitcher, SoundCloud. Please give us a high rating, 5 stars if on Apple.
Yeah. If you're listening to us and you like us, yeah. Please refer to us, refer to all your friends, say, hey, check these guys out and give us a 5-star rating. And that would help the podcast out a lot. Thank you very much.
Yes. And of course, Facebook.
Yeah. We're on Facebook. Find us on Facebook. I Can Talk Kayfabe.
We need to post more because I get those notifications. Like,
yeah, you haven't posted in a while. I get that a lot.
I'm like, hey, fuck you. I'm busy.
Yeah, I posted like 2 days ago. What do you want?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like,
yeah. We post a few times a week on there, but Facebook wants us to post every day. And that's just, you know what?
I don't have time.
It's like I don't have anything to say every day. So,
yeah.
But find us on Facebook and like us because we do interact with everybody on Facebook. And when we find cool stuff, we post it on there. So.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.